This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
Kenya's doctors and nurses are on strike, demanding an increase in pay and better working conditions. The strike began after talks called by the health ministry collapsed late Sunday.
That's Rael Ambor reporting from Nairobi. We'll have full details on this story coming up. Also, the president-elect of The Gambia pledges to reverse major decisions made by his predecessor, longtime ruler Yahya Jammeh. Central African Republic remains a violent and unstable country despite a new government taking power earlier this year. And the Italian Coast Guard saves 800 people from migrant boats off the coast of Libya yesterday in a series of 9 coordinated rescue operations. We'll have these stories and more, so stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, Kenya's doctors and nurses are on strike. They're demanding an increase in pay and better working conditions. The strike began after talks called by the health ministry collapsed late yesterday. Rael Ambor reports from VOA for VOA from Nairobi.
Nearly 2,000 Kenyan doctors and nurses marched Monday to the Ministry of Health and the Ministry of Finance in Nairobi. The Kenya Medical Practitioners and Dentists Union, which represents doctors at state hospitals, say its members are demanding a 300% salary increase from the collective bargaining agreement signed between the doctors and government in June 2013. Union leader Ouma Oluga says the Kenyan government has not upheld the agreement.
What is most annoying is the fact that we agreed with the government, they signed the pay, and up to 3 years they have not paid us our money. So that is what has brought all these doctors. This is over 2,000 doctors. We have 5,000 doctors that are on strike today in all public hospitals, from Kenyatta National Hospital to Moi Teaching and Referral Hospital to all the 47 county government hospitals. And we shall not return back to work until such a time that the government implements the CBA in full and pays in arrears.
The contentious agreement between the ministry and the union covered several issues, including review of job groups, doctors' postgraduate studies, promotions, transfers, and pay. The agreement calls for the health ministry to hire at least 1,200 doctors yearly during the next 4 years to reduce Kenya's doctor-patient ratio. If implemented under the agreement, the lowest-paid doctor will pocket $3,420 and the high slightly more than $9,400 per month. Currently, the highest physician's monthly salary is $5,000, while the lowest is $400. Striker Dr. Zephania Ashira, an obstetrician now in his third year of practice, says corruption is why doctors and public servants are poorly paid.
If you stand for a political post, is when you stand to gain financial rewards. But if you spend your time to really do the work and give service to the people, you end up going home without anything substantial.
The strike has affected all 47 counties in Kenya, leaving only private hospitals in operation. Rael Ombor for VOA News, Nairobi.
The president-elect of The Gambia has pledged to reverse major decisions made by his predecessor, longtime ruler Yahya Jammeh. Adama Barrow says The Gambia will not pull out of the International Criminal Court in The Hague. Jammeh is one of several African leaders charged with human rights violations by the ICC. The Gambia is one of 3 countries that have threatened to leave the ICC. Barrow is a businessman who led a coalition of opposition parties to end Mr. Jammeh's 22-year rule. He also says his country will not leave the Commonwealth of Nations. Barrow's term of office is 5 years, but the president-elect has vowed to serve only 3 years in order to create democratic foundations for new, free, and fair national elections. (laughs) Central African Republic remains a violent and unstable country despite a new government taking power earlier this year. The group Human Rights Watch says fighting is increasing in the central part of the country, but it's not between Muslim and Christian fighters. HRW says factions of the mostly Muslim Seleka rebels are fighting each other. Louis Mudge is Africa researcher for Human Rights Watch and has just returned to Nairobi from CAR. He spoke with VOA's Joe DiCapua about the split within the Seleka rebels.
After the Seleka were pushed out of Bangui, the capital, by international forces in the beginning of 2014, as a group they relocated to the center of the country, controlling strategic towns such as Bamburi, Batangaso, Kagabandoro, and Bria. But shortly after that, around sort of October, November 2014, the Seleka themselves split into separate different factions. Now, this split was caused for a variety of reasons. There was questions on overall strategy. There was question on overall politics of the group. But really, in reality, the split was because the groups wanted to control access to resources or access to roads on which resources traveled in order to tax people. So it was really a split to control territory for monetary gain. The Seleka rebel group was always an alliance of several different rebel groups that came out of the country's northeast.
So there was some fighting between two of these groups late last month, which resulted in some civilian deaths. Would you tell us about that?
On November 21st, very intense fighting broke out between two of these groups, the UPC and the FPRC. The fighting left well over 100 combatants dead, and it did kill some civilians. We counted 14 civilians killed around the fighting and in the days after, and at least 75 who were seriously injured. The fighting was caused by one of the groups, the UPC, trying to increase its presence in a region controlled by the FPRC. And this violence can really be traced back to the UPC's attempts earlier in the month to install themselves and gain access to a main road that leads to a diamond mine, which would have enabled them to extract taxes from people who were coming from that diamond mine.
Are they two different ethnic groups?
They are. These groups are actually two different groups. The UPC, the majority of which are made up of ethnic Pul or Fulani. These are Muslim herders that travel all across the West Africa and Central Africa regions, and they're based out of Bamburi. And the FPRC is made up of a variety of Central African ethnic groups, the majority being the Gula, which is an ethnic group that comes out of the country's northeast around the city of Birao.
We're hearing an increase of violence in Central African Republic. What about the rest of the country?
Well, unfortunately, for the rest of the country, things are not going that well. There's a new group emerging out of the country's northwest that's known as 3R. And this group is also a group that's primarily made up of Pul, these Pul being from the sort of zone between Cameroon and the Central African Republic. And they now actually control what's known in French as a sous-préfecture. They control a small territorial administration, and we have actually documented numerous cases of killings and cases of sexual violence perpetrated against women and girls associated with that group. So that's in the northwest. And then in the southeast, we're continuing to hear an increase of abductions by the Lord's Resistance Army. So this group certainly hasn't faded away in the Central African Republic.
Does the government have any real power?
No, I mean, the government was finally inaugurated as the current government we have now in March of this year. This government took over from a transition that lasted for over 2 years. And they've had a very hard time in establishing control outside of the capital, Bangui. And frankly, they've had a hard time establishing control in Bangui itself. The capital itself is susceptible to violence really at any given moment. And we saw in October, street protests turned bloody very, very quickly, and four people were killed.
Louis Mudge is Africa researcher for Human Rights Watch. From Nairobi, he spoke with VOA's Joe DiCapua. The Italian Coast Guard saved 800 migrants boats off the coast of Libya Sunday evening. They were rescued in 9 coordinated naval operations. The migrants were traveling in 5 rubber dinghies and 4 small boats. The bodies of 16 people were recovered. The migrants included Gambians, Nigerians, and Ethiopians. Many were pregnant women and unaccompanied children. Meanwhile, Italian Premier Matteo Renzi announced his resignation after losing yesterday's referendum on constitutional reforms. Reporter Josephine McKenna is following the stories in Rome. She spoke with me about the migrant rescues and the potential impact of Renzi's resignation on the migrant crisis.
Well, in several operations coordinated by the Italian Coast Guard, 800 migrants were rescued and were being taken to 2 ports in Sicily, Augusta and Trapani today. But 16 people tragically died on these vessels, and rescue teams were dealing with very unfavourable conditions. Quite unusual to see that the numbers have not been dropping off. People are still desperate to make that crossing as the temperatures and the weather gets much more dangerous going into the winter months. But several operations still underway because there are requests for help coming from that area just off the coast of Libya, and many of the vessels are still in trouble in that area, according to the Coast Guard.
What is the Coast Guard saying about this, considering we're going into colder months coming up? And as you say, it appears that the migrants are continuing to make that risky attempt across the sea despite the weather.
Well, the Coast Guard is, as we know, committed to continuing these operations. They do that in conjunction with NGOs, the organization Médecins Sans Frontières and SOS Mediterranean were involved in these operations. One ship that's coordinated by SOS, called Aquarius, was carrying 353 people, including 2 women that died from hypothermia. There were also others in a very serious state of hypothermia and being treated on board. But these people are coming in desperation and they're not stopping.
You mentioned that some of the people have died from hypothermia, and in a picture that I saw that was posted online, it showed in this last rescue that it appears that the people are not preparing themselves for the weather because they weren't dressed warm enough from what I could see.
Well, often it's probably a situation where we've got people fleeing poverty or conflict. They're coming from perhaps very hot temperatures. They may not realize the conditions, or they may have lost some of their belongings along the way or had them stolen from them. I noticed on one of the vessels, many of the Nigerians were in a serious state of agitation, and it was only through medical intervention and reassurance that they were able to continue the operation and continue the rescue. So it's a very precarious situation. And also it's worth mentioning that several women were found to be pregnant during the rescue, I should say, and 24 on one vessel were children, unaccompanied children. So that's also of great concern to NGOs and other authorities who are trying to ensure that people are safe and are protected when they make this very dangerous crossing.
It just brings to light just how desperate the situation is, that these people are risking their lives, taking a risky journey, not knowing what to expect on the sea. And at the same time, we have the Italian Premier Matteo Renzi, who's announced that he's going to be resigning after losing yesterday's referendum on some constitutional reforms. So, Josephine, how do you think this will impact the migrant crisis?
To say, we're just waiting for the final confirmation of the Prime Minister's resignation. He's meeting his cabinet late today and then is expected to meet the President after having a discussion with the President earlier today. The President is likely to put in place a caretaker government. At this point, that government is likely to continue the policies that we've seen. But as we know, the Italian government has been protesting that other European countries are not doing enough. And we saw that complaint too today from the UN Refugee Agency, demanding that the European Union look at some reforms on migrants, offering more integration and asylum, offering greater support to the countries of origin to try and prevent any more casualties across the Mediterranean.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna speaking from Rome. Well, chaos continues to reign in Libya. For example, 2 large militias are battling in the streets of Tripoli. The UN-backed government is running out of cash reserves. Criminal gangs are making millions of dollars smuggling migrants to Europe. And a military leader, General Khalifa Haftar, has met with Russian officials in Moscow. Claudia Gazzini is the senior Libya analyst for the International Crisis Group. From Rome, she told VOA's David Arnold that U.S. support for a struggling unity government might shift next year.
So we could say that in the past few months, actually, the economic situation has deteriorated. The banking problems that Libya has been facing, oil exports have increased, but the money coming from the oil revenues has not been distributed. Now, the positive thing is that the fight against ISIS terrorists in Sirte has made progress. They used to control a coastal area of about 200 kilometers, and now they're limited to about 1 square kilometer in the center of Sirte. But this victory is overshadowed by the ongoing political chaos that exists in the country.
Let me ask you a question. You mentioned recognized governments. Which of these governments is being recognized by other countries?
The House of Representatives in Tobruk isn't a government. It's actually a parliament. And on paper, it still remains Libya's only parliament. In terms of government, the only internationally recognized government is the one in Tripoli. It's actually not even a government in the sense that at the moment it's only a body which we call a presidential council, which was first step towards the creation of a unity government. On the surface, most countries, the U.S. and Russia and Egypt and the UAE, do recognize on paper the authority of the presidential council. But what's happening is that on the ground, some countries pay lip service to the existence of the presidential council, but militarily on the ground, they're supporting forces that are opposed to the presidential council. So, for example, General Haftar, who's the main military figure in eastern Libya, who has the blessing of the House of Representatives, controls most of eastern Libya. And he receives active military support from Egypt and the UAE. So in a certain sense, many countries are recognizing the presidential council in Tripoli, but at the same time working against it by supporting military actors on the ground.
So if the ultimate goal is unity of some sort, it seems like there are two opposing forces here, the presidency council in Tripoli and General Haftar, who apparently recently made a trip to Moscow. Which of these two forces is likely to prevail?
In principle, the presidential council, with its international recognition, should be in a better position to prevail because, in principle, it should have control over the country's finances. It should be able to ask for international support. But actually, it's finding itself in a very difficult situation because it's really unable to govern, either because it's incompetent or because of the difficult situation in Tripoli. They haven't made much progress, and people are increasingly disaffected and turning against the authority of the presidential council.
Where does this leave General Haftar?
If the presidential council is unable to solve the day-to-day problems of Libya, in the long term, we can see Haftar prevailing because he's actually cashing in on this popular resentment towards the international process and the internationally backed authority. And if Russia starts to step in supporting him, and this is far from a foregone conclusion, that could be a game changer. And of course, we'll have to see what Trump at the White House will do in terms of shifting alliances.
Does this mean that the next president of the United States may be talking to Russia about a changing policy toward Libya?
The U.S. until now has been one of the main supporters of the presidential council, and it increasingly backs the idea that the presidential council should continue even without official parliamentary recognition. This position is somewhat controversial. It has other backers aside from the U.S., mainly Western European states. But with Trump, we could see a rethinking of this policy. For this reason, I say we'll have to wait and see what the new administration does, because it could be that Trump will decide to change the U.S. position and no longer pursue what was the position of the Democratic administration so far. And it could come closer to Russian position, which seems to call for continued recognition of the House of Representatives, of the parliament, in cooperation with the presidential council. Yeah, we definitely could see a rapprochement of Russian and U.S. positions under Trump.
That was Claudia Gazzini of the International Crisis Group. From Rome, she spoke with VOA's David Arnold. 24 minutes past the hour. This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Well, Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe will deliver his State of the Nation address to members of parliament tomorrow. The speech was originally scheduled to be given last week, but Mr. Mugabe traveled to Cuba to attend the funeral of longtime leader Fidel Castro. The government of Cameroon says its security forces did not abuse protesters during clashes in two regions last month. Students and professionals in English-speaking parts of Cameroon were denouncing what they call the overbearing influence of the French language in the bilingual country. The United States has expressed deep concern about the tensions. Moki Edwin Kinziga has more from Yaoundé.
Government spokesman Issa Chiruma says, contrary to widespread media reports, the military did not abuse the rights of protesting teachers and lawyers in the English-speaking regions of the Central African state.
Law enforcement officers handled the demonstration in Bamenda and Boya with restraint and professionalism in strict compliance with the international laws and commitment of Cameroon in matters of human rights. Nevertheless, investigations are underway, and in the event of proven misconduct, the government will take some disciplinary and corrective measures in compliance with the provision laid down by the law.
Chiruma said Cameroon will not tolerate any attempts to disrupt the country's hard-earned national unity, insisting that requests for Cameroon to return to a federal state, a political system scrapped in a 1972 referendum, cannot be granted. The spokesman said he was reacting to a statement issued November 28 by the U.S. State Department. The release expressed concern about the deaths, injuries, and damage that resulted from protests which turned violent in Bamenda and Boya, the respective capitals of Cameroon's northwestern and southwestern regions. U.S. Ambassador to Cameroon, Michael Hoza, has also expressed concerns over the violence. He met with Cameroon's president, Paul Biya, and explained his country's position on the protest that turned violent.
It is the American government's position that Cameroon has great strength in diversity. Cameroon has a wonderful history of tolerance. And both President Biya and I agree that dialogue is the future for Cameroon. We know that there will be discussions, and we are certain that the Cameroonian people will find a solution and be able to live together in tolerance as they have for many, many years.
The ongoing protests were called by English-speaking lawyers, followed by teachers and then university students protesting the dominance of French in Cameroon. The lawyers have complained that some judges posted to English-speaking areas are not fluent in the language. The U.S. has extended its deferral of all non-essential travel for U.S. embassy personnel to the northwestern and southwestern regions until December 6 due to the unrest. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Yaoundé.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Wojtech Zorniak, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next on Let's Talk, the act and art of modeling. How popular is it in Africa? Would you choose modeling as a career? Join host Sunday Shomari and his guests discussing modeling. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.